In the house, Non-Human Radio. And thank you for listening to Without a Roof Radio program, the April 19th edition. Next edition will be for the pledge drive. So can't wait. This, your show's on wool today, right? Wool? A show on wool. I had texted Jeannie saying, tell me more about wool. So we're going to hear a lot about wool.
All right. Watch out, idiot. Yep, we're going to hear about wool. But first, Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights of Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan, oh yes, delicious vegan, and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with live music on Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, located at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by Burchard Construction, specializing in custom remodels, new home and commercial building from foundation to finish work. Burchard Construction, where the homeowner's input matters to ensure a professional, reliable, and quality result. Custom construction with beauty and function. For bids and consultations, call Adam Burchard at 864-5427 or visit burchardconstruction.com. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. All right. Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM. We're streaming online at kzfr.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Danny Toms. Today we're going to talk about sheep, which means we'll talk about wool and why vegans avoid it, and lambs, and why you might want to stop eating baby animals.
At least, like, curb a little bit, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're cute, they're fuzzy, but it's also the moral thing to do. So let's get started, Jeannie.
Okay. So in last week's show, we talked about the conflicts between wild bighorn sheep and sheep ranching in the West and how the bighorn comes out on the losing side of those encounters. We discovered that sheep ranching is responsible for these management practices, which are essentially management by murder policies that affect the bighorn sheep. And specifically, we talked about examples in Colorado. So we thought it would be helpful to take a deeper look at the sheep industry, both in the United States and in the world. So in the big picture, there are a lot of sheep in the world. They're raised for meat and for wool and to a lesser extent for their milk. Though, of course, in the end, all sheep raised for wool or milk are slaughtered for meat for somebody. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, in 2012, there were more than 1.2 billion, that's billion with a B, sheep worldwide.
So that's like one sheep, or what's the singular of sheep? Sheep?
We could have a whole show about how animals are not identified as individuals, right?
Right. One sheep or more sheep, you know, one sheep per six people, basically, yeah. Assuming 6 billion people in the world. That's a lot of animals.
So sheep production is on the rise in some countries, declining in others. And while China has the most sheep, Australia and New Zealand dominate the world markets for lambs and wool. In the United States, there is an estimated 2.2 million sheep and lambs that are slaughtered for meat every year. And surprisingly, when I looked into it, Texas and California have the most sheep. Small producers who own flocks with less than 100 sheep comprise the majority of sheep farms, but as with the beef industry, the U.S. sheep industry is actually dominated by a small number of large operators with a lot of sheep.
It's not family farmers?
But, I mean, the profile is that there are a lot of small holdings that have relatively small numbers of sheep. Compared to other animal ag industries, mm-hmm. The sheep industry is very small overall, accounting for less than 1% of the total U.S. livestock revenue. So most of that revenue comes from the sale of baby sheep or lambs for people to eat.
Wonderful.
Not me, yeah. but others. I looked into Butte County specifically, and the county ag report for Butte County in 2015 showed that there are about 1,500 sheep who were raised and slaughtered here. In Tehama County, about 4,700 sheep were raised and slaughtered. And then looking back, because farmers keep a lot of records, you know, back in 1965, over 80,000 sheep were raised and slaughtered in Tehama County. So that, in terms of like, you know, rise and fall of the sheep industry, clearly a big decline. Over in Glenn County, so our friends in Orland, there were a little over 6,000 sheep were raised there in 2015, raised and slaughtered in 2015. And interestingly, the Glenn County website had what they call a crop report from 1910 on their website. It said that there were 91,000 sheep raised and slaughtered back then. So in California, the top counties for sheep production are in the Central Valley, the lower Central Valley, Fresno, Kern, Solano, Sonoma, and Imperial counties. Right, and that's mostly for lamb. Sheep ranchers in the U.S. So now we're going to get into like what the animal raising process is like in the United States. Sheep ranchers in the U.S. typically slaughter their lambs when they are pretty young because we as American consumers prefer eating lamb chops. We just got through Easter, which is the number one holiday where eating baby sheep is a tradition. Lambs are killed when they're only about 6 to 8 months old. But the natural lifespan of a sheep is actually similar to large breeds of dogs, so about 10 to 12 years, right? And the oldest sheep live to be about 23. So we're seeing like this range of ages, but again, in animal agriculture, we're seeing young animals purposefully raised and slaughtered. And even if sheep are allowed to live to adulthood for purposes of either giving birth to more lambs for meat or perhaps to be used for wool, these animals are usually killed or culled, removed from the flocks by about age 7 because it's simply not profitable to keep them around for longer.
So not only is the California myth of happy cows obviously a lie, but it's even unhappier for sheep if we're talking about, you know, killing babies at 6 to 8 months old.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to go to really some dark places too with that.
Yeah.
And sadly, the practice of raising lambs in feedlots like they do for cattle is growing. In Texas, Colorado, and the Corn Belt, which is Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, and Kansas, lamb feedlots operate year-round. So sheep are giving birth, and these young animals are heading off to feedlots to be fattened up to the right weight and age so that they can be killed for lamb chops. So if you think you're getting away from factory farming by consuming lamb chops, you are not. One peculiar subset of the whole industry that I learned about is this thing called so-called club lamb. It's the club lamb business. So club lambs are young lambs. They're called feeder lambs that young humans purchase to raise as market lamb projects to exhibit.
Would anybody be upset if those young humans were slaughtered at 6 months old and eaten by, a guy from Mars?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess if you carry the correlation, so say a sheep lives to 23 years.
Right.
And humans live, let's say, 72 years. So that's like a six-fold ratio. It would be like killing a 3- or 4-year-old
kid. Okay. Well, yeah? That might make it better.
Anyway, so this club lamb industry, it's not huge, but it's like, it's a thing. It's where young people purchase these lambs to raise them as market lamb projects to exhibit at county and state fairs. So think your 4-H or Future Farmers of America FFA projects, which is really big in this county. I know my neighbors where I live out in the orchards, there's like 2 or 3 animals kept in fairly small pens that I know are 4-H projects. an industry website. So I got a lot of this information from the industry. I didn't get it from PETA or Mercy for Animals or some other animal welfare or animal rights group. This is coming from mostly a site called sheep101.info, and you can go to it yourself and look it up. An industry website described market lambs as terminal projects, quote, terminal projects, meaning that they start with the purchase of a lamb and end with the sale of the lamb for slaughter or for meat. The industry website went out of its way to criticize these youth projects for their distasteful and overly competitive animal husbandry practices. For instance, there's a distinct lack of forage in the diet, so these animals are not allowed to graze. They're given feed to fatten them up for the show. They are castrated late in life, and we're going to talk about castration a little bit more. And they are commonly, their tails are docked ultra short because that looks better in the show ring. And these animals are also forced to exercise because that builds up bigger muscles and looks, again, better in the show ring. So the whole business of how young people are educated and indoctrinated into animal agriculture is something that we will cover on another show.
Yeah, but essentially one group of sheep killers is saying the other group of sheep killers is even worse.
Yes. So anyway, so let's talk about common practices in the sheep business, mostly in the United States, but also applicable elsewhere. We'll talk about the Australian sheep market, which is the dominant sheep market in the world. But for now, we'll talk about the United States. First and foremost, did you know that sheep have tails?
Yeah, I kind of had forgotten.
Right. You probably didn't even think about it because most lambs that you might see on YouTube or whatever, they've already had their tails docked. It's commonly done within a few weeks of birth. And the procedure is called tail docking, just like it is with dogs.
And you'll notice all these things are indirect words masking what happens, right?
It's amputation or mutilation.
Right.
And it's done supposedly to reduce the buildup of fecal matter around their backsides. The fecal matter attracts flies which lay eggs that hatch into maggots that can eventually injure the sheep when the maggots start burrowing into the wool and then the skin and then the flesh of the animal. And that can lead to a sad, painful, and rather disgusting death. So, of course, the rancher's solution to this problem, which is a man-made problem, it happens because we keep sheep in captivity and rather closed quarters, is to remove that tail, which can be actually quite long. So a natural sheep tail can actually reach down to the hocks of that sheep. So like that first angle of the leg, it'll reach down to there. Removing the tail involves either cutting off the tail with what is basically a giant electric hot-bladed fingernail clipper or fastening a tight rubber band around the tail until it literally rots and falls off.
Which one do you want to choose?
In Britain, which outlaws tail docking and ear cropping in companion animals and dogs, they require farmers to dock lamb tails when the babies are 1 week old or less. In the U.S., tail docking is not regulated, but standard practice is to dock sometime before 6 weeks of age. That's standard practice. So, does this hurt? It sure does. Lambs exhibit signs of pain when subjected to either method of tail docking. Tail docking can also lead to chronic pain and an increase in the occurrence of rectal prolapse. Again, this is straight from the Sheep 101 website. It's not from PETA. It's not from Mercy for Animals or Farm Sanctuary. The procedures are performed without anesthetic and usually handled on the farm, traditionally by non-veterinarians. The rubber band method of docking the tail, which is the most common method because it's cheap and easy, also puts the lambs at risk for tetanus because it's an anaerobic type situation for this as this tail is rotting off. So it's just like horrible. Is it necessary? The farmers think so, of course, partly because they've always done it, so they always will do it.
Right.
Interestingly, lambs raised for the halal meat market for special Muslim festivals, even in the United States, they prefer their lambs that are unblemished. So the lambs that are going to be destined for the halal market, no tail docking. So it's not, so how necessary is it, right? If some lambs can survive without it or be sold to market without it. So in the end, it's mostly an economic decision that wool maggot infestation is an issue, but so is the fact that shearing the sheep is more difficult when there's a tail. So the tail's docked because for sheep raised for wool, it's tougher to do. Castration Castration of male sheep or rams is almost an entirely economic decision, mostly depending on whether castration affects the overall price of the animal at market and whether also how the animals are housed. So if the males and females are separated, it's less essential to castrate the males because you're not going to have any accidental breeding going on. But if they're housed together, then that's an issue. Artificial insemination is not as common in the sheep industry as it is in the dairy industry because it's a smaller animal. It's a trickier thing to do. So, but as with tail docking, there are many techniques that can be used to castrate the rams, the young ram lambs. The rubber band thing is used around the lamb's testicles commonly, and that will cause the testicles to shrivel up and fall off in about 2 to 3 weeks. It's just awful. Does that cause pain? It sure does, which even the industry website acknowledges. But they dismiss it because it is a short-lived pain. Male lambs are castrated at a young age, between 1 and 7 days of age.
Think about going, taking your kid to the dentist, and we're just going to rip this baby tooth out. It's short-lived pain. It'll be gone in a couple weeks.
Yeah, right. It'll heal. Yeah. So some veterinarians recommend using lidocaine to reduce the pain, but guess what? Lidocaine is not available for purchase over-the-counter, so you can't get it at the feed store. And the industry isn't lobbying to have those rules changed so they can get this pain-alleviating medication. Right. But then on the other hand, nor will they hire vets to do the job who are allowed to use lidocaine. So, and the issue of tetanus that I mentioned earlier with the docking, tail docking is also an issue with castration. So, yeah, that's the quick and dirty from the industry of how lamb chops are made in the United States. It's just like, why would you participate in that, right?
Especially when it's this weird, you know, we only eat this baby animal on this Easter day of the year to celebrate our God, so we kill babies, and otherwise we don't even eat this food all year long.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, the millions of animals going through this just cycle of suffering is pretty horrible.
Yeah. So let's go on to wool.
Yeah.
Because we're running long here. This is an information dense episode of Non-Human Radio.
Yeah, so
I think it's important for people to
definitely
learn about this.
I mean, I've had all these thoughts, you know, before I went vegetarian to vegan, that, you know, leather, wool, it's just sort of a byproduct, but hopefully over the different shows you're understanding all these things are tied together and they're all for profit and there's no ethical piece of any animal. So, you know, maybe you're a vegetarian, right, and you don't eat lamb chops because it's as we've said, you're eating a cute, innocent baby animal, and it's kind of messed up, and you don't want any part of that. But, you know, wool is the thing, right? Wool sweaters, your fancy suits, that's what mom got, that's what grandpa got, that's what, you know, upper-class people or really cold people or whatever are wearing. So, you know, why don't vegans wear wool? What's wrong with wool? So, most sheep need to be sheared at least once a year, and by shearing we mean, you know, restraining and cutting off their hair, some twice a year, and some sheep farmers make the majority of their income from shearing and selling raw wool. But for other operations, wool might be a byproduct of lamb production, the baby animals being killed, or sometimes it's even a negative cost of production. So the wool you wear might be a byproduct of the lamb chop industry, and that's not very vegetarian friendly, is it? Sheep are generally sheared early in the spring as possible so they don't get overheated by the time summer comes. Additionally, industry practice is to shear pregnant sheep before they give birth. Part of the rationale for this is that sheared sheep take up less room in the barn and around feeders. It's easier for lambs to nurse sheared ewes. Am I saying that right, Jeannie?
Ewes. Yeah. That's a female sheep. Yeah, adult, yes. Female sheep.
And again, this is straight from the sheep101.info. Industry website. So really, you know, micromanaging animal space, right, because you're just cramming them in there. Shearing itself is a very gritty, harsh business for the sheep. The shearer has no time to waste, call me down, uncooperative sheep. It's by volume. It's very fast. Many sheep suffer severe cuts and wounds during the shearing process, and obviously it's traumatic. Professional shearers can shear an entire adult sheep in under a minute with powerful electric clippers that often cut and wound around the sheep's skin, cutting off ears and gashing their faces. I mean, think about it. Think how big a sheep is, or your yellow lab, or, you know, and shaving that whole animal in a minute is just crazy. And if you think small farms will pay more attention to their animals and treat them better, you would probably do well to be aware that small farms often have a more difficult time finding one to shear their sheep. And while it's stressful for a sheep to be shorn by a professional, it's even worse if it's done by an amateur. Additional stress for the sheep is that they are fasted before shearing. Why? Because that means that the shearing area will remain clean of feces and urine. It's all about economics, my friends. And, you know, if your products have to worry about feces and urine, maybe you don't want to buy that product. The well-being of the sheep is the least concern. The world wool market is dominated by Australia. China is the world's largest consumer of wool and the third largest producer. New Zealand is the second largest producer. In the United States, wool production is subsidized, of course, by the federal government under a USDA marketing assistance loan program.
Yeah, so even as small as it is, it's still got federal support.
Your tax dollars at work killing animals. The most common breed of sheep in the Australian wool industry is the Merino sheep, who are specially bred to have wrinkly skin, which means more wool per animal. This, you know, unnatural overload of wool due to the unnatural breeding by humans causes many sheep to collapse and die of heat exhaustion during hot months. If they don't die, even if they don't die, their wrinkles are a hazard because they collect fecal material, urine, and moisture, which causes fly strike, which Jeannie mentioned earlier when she was talking about tail docking in baby lambs. In this condition, the fly lays eggs in the folds of the skin, and the maggots basically eat the animal alive or cause secondary infection. The sheep population in Australia is over 70 million animals, so the well-being of any individual sheep is negligible, just as it is in any other intensive animal practice. So this is where things get even more disturbing. To prevent fly strike, Australian ranchers perform a barbaric procedure called mulesing, which is a very indirect word about how they force the live sheep onto their backs. They restrain their legs on metal racks or tie them up, often without any painkillers, and they literally carve away the skin from around the animal's buttocks and openings, or they attach clamps to the flesh until it dies and falls off. It's pretty horrific. I actually looked this up as I was reading this, and you know, you can look at the pictures. It's terribly painful. It's generally done on the farm without a vet, and the animal is walking around with basically, you know, its buttocks cut off for 4 weeks, just waiting for it to heal. And that's where your wool sweater comes from. And so this mutilation is a crude attempt to create smoother skin that won't collect this moisture and attract the fly strike fly. But often these bloody wounds become infected anyway. And many of these sheep just die from the mutilation. So, you know, in the tragic sum, wool producers have created this fly strike danger for the sheep by cramming them all together. And then that is then used as a rationale and an excuse to do even crueler things like cut off their flesh and just send them out in the field on these really sensitive and innocent creatures. Because what matters for the industry is that more skin folds equals more wool, and less skin folds around, you know, the anus means less risk of fly strike. And so it's all about more sheep, more wool, more money. And that's literally the bottom line. So if you think about it, if ranchers have to actually mutilate innocent living creatures along the way to make a profit, and that they're willing to do that, it's not a good thing, and it's not something you want to participate in. And additionally, you don't, as a consumer, have any way of knowing where your wool came from, if it came from these mules, these you know, tortured sheep, basically, because there's no labeling to that. And you know, as any kind of mass agriculture process, everything is bought up from small distributors and mixed up and then shipped out and sold. So, you know, pretty much any wool item you're wearing is came from sheep who this was done to. And this is why, you know, vegans don't wear wool or buy wool. But it's not yet over talking about wool. Jeannie,
all right,
what's next?
Thanks, Danny. You've been listening to Non-Human Radio with hosts Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms here on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. We've been talking about lambs and sheep, and Danny just talked about these unconscionable industry practices of mulesing, which is mutilating live animals. But the worst is yet to come. While the world goes about wearing wool socks, sweaters, and suits, and also our listeners may not be aware that lanolin is a wool byproduct, so even something as innocuous as your hand lotion can be a product of great suffering. There's more suffering ahead for sheep born into the wool industry. As we've mentioned, Americans don't commonly eat a whole lot of sheep. We certainly don't eat a lot of mutton, which is the flesh of adult sheep. Most of us just find lamb in the supermarket if you eat lamb. However, sheep are commonly eaten all across countries in the Middle East. When the wool production declines. Many Australian sheep are sent to auction, which itself is a traumatic process, but there's worse ahead. After the auction process, these animals are sent by the millions to the Middle East on huge live transport ships. These are basically like you see your little semi-tractor trailers on the highways here carrying pigs or cattle. Well, these are six-story tankers, equivalent of tankers that carry up to 30 to 40,000 sheep. There's even some that are supersized that carry up to 130,000 animals for a trip from Australia to the Middle Eastern countries on journeys that last about 3 weeks.
Wow.
So these animals go from a grazing situation onto these confined quarters where their feed is changed, they're crowded together.
Rocking
it's,
on a boat.
It's just awful,
it's a
right?
machine, yeah.
Yeah. So if they survive that trip, they'll be slaughtered commonly in Middle Eastern countries without being stunned first. Their throats are cut and they're slaughtered alive. So that means after a miserable life, they will feel every moment of a terrifying death because there's no stunning process. I really think it's important to look at the entire sequence of life and death surrounding your decision to wear wool. Maybe we vegans don't seem so crazy after all, you know, because we have learned about these procedures and these systems, and we choose to disengage from it. In many ways, I think wool causes more suffering than a hamburger, because all these things happen out of our sight and out of our observation. So, if you just tuned in, you've been listening to Non-Human Radio, and we did a quick wrap-up here on the wool and sheep and lamb industry.
All right, it's time for the Animal Rights Calendar of Events.
Yeah, you can turn away from causing harm to animals by going vegan and trying it out. So this Saturday, April 22nd, we have the Chico Vegan Potluck from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Chico Library Community Room at 1108 Sherman Avenue. And I really encourage you to check it out. We have about 30 people who come, maybe more, and it's a very open and welcoming environment. If you are not vegetarian or vegan, if you still eat meat, it's fine. You just have to be vegan for 2 hours. And the theme for our Saturday potluck is umami. So it'll be savory, tasty food, and you'll learn a little bit more about diversity outside of meat, milk, and cheese, and eggs. So, yeah. And then a heads up, on April 24th, we have a great speaker coming to Chico State at 7 o'clock in the Arts Building, Arts 111. That'll be Jonathan Belcom, who'll be talking about fish sentience and his book, What a Fish Knows, The Inner Lies of Our Underwater Cousins. That should be a great talk. Jonathan is very charismatic and has like a whole bunch of stories to tell you about how fish are a lot smarter and a lot more social than you would ever think. So, if you have any tips for animal rights events, go ahead and send us an email at chicovegan@gmail.com. We have one last bit of business to take care of. The animal rights quote of the week. Take it away, Danny.
Is from Mahatma Gandhi, the great soul, who asked us to think a little deeper about the animals whose lives we so casually consume. Gandhi wrote, "To my mind, the life of a lamb is no less precious than that of a human being." And ultimately, that's sort of our vegan approach.
Yeah. Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Guillermo Mash of Without a Roof and Sue Hildebrand for their past and present and future engineering assistance and moral support. Stay tuned for The Real Issue coming up next.
You've been listening to Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, or its staff.
If you missed any portion of this show or you want to listen again, please visit the archives at kzfr.org and search for Non-Human Radio. This is Jeannie Trezino and Danny Toms signing off.
Be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.